This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Good evening. This is Monday's Late Late Show with Ray. Tonight we will be discussing English classrooms in secondary schools, to set or not to set. So we'll be talking about a range of experiences of mixed ability in set classes and deciding which one works for everyone. Or is there a third option?
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
So, talking about mixed ability or setted classes in secondary English in UK school specifically, because I think a lot of the things we're going to discuss, a lot of the things I'm going to complain about are specific to life in the UK and the education system we have over here. I was talking about this issue with some of my friends who are teachers in America, in the US, and they do not seem to have the same concerns that we do, strangely. But we're gonna come at it from our range of experiences across a range of secondary schools across England. So my guest and I will be discussing what we think in our many years of experience works for the students that we have in our particular schools. Now, this is a topic that I have had very strong opinions about from the time I was a student myself. And I feel like I need to warn listeners that I have had a day again. So my very strong opinions on this topic are probably not going to be tempered as much as they should. But when I was a student, I remember being very frustrated because I was a good student, good in quotation marks. I was an unholy terror in a number of ways, but I was a good student, and I really, really, really liked school. For the vast majority of my school experience, I really loved it, and I loved learning, and I loved learning stupid things about things I didn't even really care about. I just liked learning stuff. I was one of those kids, and I was very good at it. Some subjects more than others, but in general, I was very good at it, and I was perpetually frustrated and infuriated by the approach that many of my teachers took to me being a good student and being on top of the work and being ahead of things and getting stuff done and understanding things without needing to go back and forth about it. And their approach in many situations involved essentially me being an unpaid TA for other students who were not grasping material as quickly as I was. And I have clearly lifelong bitterness that I've been holding on to. And I think that also feeds into my very strong feelings about everything from just how material is presented to differentiation in general to, or adapted teaching, whatever we're calling things these days, and sets and mixed ability groupings and so on. I got some thoughts about it. Now, my guest this evening is another reason why I should probably be a little bit more moderate than I'm likely to be, because she's actually, I think, technically my boss. So Carol is she's a member of SLT at my school, and she has very, very kindly agreed to come on and share her insights and experience and knowledge about this particular topic, because she also has very strong feelings about this that are very, very different from mine. But Carol's been doing this longer, and she's far more knowledgeable and sensible about things than I am. So she's going to share her views on this, and hopefully we can come to some sort of sensible, maybe not agreement, but some sort of sensible discussions.
Yeah, I've been teaching for quite a few years now, and I've taught in Kent for a long time, 10 years. And in Kent, they still have the system where they set at age 11 in terms of the 11 plus, and they move 25% in grammar schools, and the other group of children, the 75% left, go to secondary schools, and that creates an immediate divide, an immediate fear of learning for 75% of our students in that area. And having grown up in that area and having experienced that myself, I failed my 11 plus. I went to a secondary school, and I remember very clearly feeling that sort of my friends in my primary school class were obviously much brighter than me, much more capable than me. I wasn't going to do well at school, and I was going to find school very difficult. I had them as a failure. My dad went to grammar school. For me, that's a really negative experience for a young person to suffer at the age of 11. And so I do have very strong feelings about this, and how my secondary school had to work really hard to raise the aspirations of those children that I went to school with, to encourage them to be successful. And as I qualified, I trained in both grammar schools and secondary schools, and I did not enjoy working in grammar schools. And again, this very much comes from a perspective, as most perspectives do, but very much that, you know, grammar school children felt that they were brighter, capable, much, much more able than secondary school children. In fact, there was often this kind of misconstrued understanding that even their exams were harder. There was a clearly right if it was a general secondary sort of education system, but there was an elite. There was a belief that grammar schools are more elite than secondary schools, and therefore the children that seceded from those schools were of better quality. And that, from my own made me feel very, very sad about education. 75% of our children were treated. And I moved deliberately out of that area so that my own children wouldn't go through that experience. So they both went to a comprehensive school. My son's dyslexic. He finds learning very, very difficult, but has been, you know, relatively successful. Comprehensive school is now college, and my daughter more academic. At the same time, I need to do significantly better academically. But they both felt welcomed, included, and very happy at secondary school. And that's what I wanted for them. I didn't want them to feel at 11 years old overwhelmed. I think that has definitely influenced how I feel about setting in comprehensive schools, and why I've chosen to work in schools, I suppose, that support or promote that very inclusive attitude.
Yeah. No, I feel similarly. I swore when I got into this job, and there are days where I think like, but I still believe this. I would never work in a independent school or a grammar school. Just for a wide range of kind of philosophical reasons, I wouldn't be happy doing that.
I'm very against that idea of grouping children at the age of 11 into schools.
Yeah, yeah. There.
Because I don't believe that ability is set at that age,
No, of course not.
That is a productive way to learn all young people, but that doesn't mean that there isn't a place for grouping children at different times in the academic year for different reasons. And I think that we have to be quite pragmatic in the way that we plan and deliver a curriculum. And I also think that the school, the head teacher, and the head of department have to have an element of independence and say in how they're going to organise each year group. Because they're meant to be special reasons why you want to have maybe a nurture group.
Yeah.
If they've got very low ability reading, you know, very low reading ages, they need their reading ages to increase. So maybe there is a nurture group, a small group of children who are missing of education and who need that you know, smaller groups, more carefully chosen texts to raise their reading age. You know, and I also believe that there are some children that need that more nurturing style throughout their their time in secondary school, but to sort of to label sets 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and to then place groups of children and say, well, this is your set, this is for your day.
Yeah, and everything you said makes complete sense to me. So I've worked, and I mean actually worked, not including my placements on PGC when I first came to this country, because it was all a blur of culture shock and embarrassment. But I've worked in three schools since then, and they've all had very different approaches to sets and streams and things in general, but particularly with English. So I've seen this whole wide range, and the nurture groups that you mentioned have appeared in two of these schools, and even the third one had a special kind of stream that was kind of a nurture group. It was like a alternative provision thing, but it wasn't called a nurture group, and I think it didn't run the way a nurture group should, at least not according to Kate Murray, who was a guest a few weeks ago, talking about the wonderful work that she does in our school with our nurture kids. And I've seen the wonderful things that can come out of those small special groups for those kids who need them. I've also seen setting go wrong and just go to turn into the very bizarre. So my last school have just changed the setting system for Key Stage 3, but for Key Stage 4, the entire time I was there, it was sets. I mean, you said set 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I think. They had sets 1 to 9, which, yes, exactly. And it was an interesting approach. I think the only, well, one of the things we liked about it, and one of the things that having so many different classes, sets, or groups allowed for was that they shrunk as you went down, so to speak. So the set one had 30 kids in it. I had 31 one year, even though I had 30 desks in the room. And then set 9 would be, you know, 6 kids. So it was kind of a nurture group by another name, although again, not quite a proper one. But as you can imagine, it became a bit of a joke among the kids and at times among the staff. The set 9 was quite recent, actually. That was a recent thing when the year groups expanded slightly. But for a long time, it was set 1 to 8, and kids would say things like, you know, what are you, set 8? Like as banter, which is so unbelievably demoralizing for the students who actually find themselves in set 8. It's just horrific for a lot of them. And also, as I'm sure you can imagine, if you try and set students in kind of any subject that specifically, you're going to make a lot of mistakes, because learning isn't linear and children learn at different paces, and sometimes data is inaccurate. And you end up with a kid in set 5 who's clearly on track to get a grade 8 or 9. And, you know, mistakes were made. So you'd end up with all these middle sets that were not what they were supposed to be. So it was a very interesting system at Key Stage 4, and kind of one extreme end of the spectrum. I think complete mixed ability with no nurture or anything is kind of the other end of that spectrum. Like, I feel like what we've got in our school with year 10 specifically is the opposite end of that. So I've seen a whole bunch of things, and I can see and I've taught a whole bunch of things, and I can see the benefits on all sides. Like it works for, I mean, because some things are always going to work for some students and not for others. That is the nature of when you're educating hundreds or thousands of children at a time. You're always it's, things are going to work and not work because everyone's individual. But would you agree that it's about trying to find A, what works for the school with their intake, with their students, and within the systems that, you know, we're forced to have, and B, trying to put in place things that create the greatest good for the greatest number of students? Like, is given the parameters we have to work within, like, should those be the determining criteria for the decisions regarding sets or mixed ability?
Yeah, I think it depends on the cohort that you've got for an active. So I know that our heads department has changed from previous, where we had a top set or two top sets on either side, mm-hmm. banding, and then mixed abilities all the way down. So that was the current year 12 when they were year 11. That was how they'd organised the GCSEs. But this year, the current year 11, we've had mixed ability all the way through with just a small nurture group taken out.
And yeah,
that was decided by the head of department because of the nature of the cohort, the challenge they presented to behaviour in terms of their ability to cooperate with each other, and how damaging we felt it would be to their self-esteem to remove, to have a top set or to put in sets. Because I work with children, we work with children that have very low self-esteem, and so it's not difficult to damage that even further. I do think it's very important. You've got both issues here. You've got the social issue and you've got the academic issue. And you have to look at all of those issues if you're going to get this right for your cohort. But I also think that it very much depends on the members of staff that you've got as well and their expertise. Yeah. Because there are, you need to be a very skilled teacher to differentiate really effectively for a wide mixed ability group. So you've got grade nines and students that are on sort of ones and twos. You've got to be, very, very capable of managing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that you need to look at your staff as well and think, right, can my staff manage that challenge? And is it going to be the best possible option for those children? Or do I need to rethink this and have sort of mixed ability groups on a certain level with nurture groups or support groups? And also, I think there's so many other factors that come in. As you said, it's not just about the child's score on a test on a particular day or a particular month,
mm-hmm.
a year. I think we also have to understand that children are then impacted by attendance, they're
mm-hmm.
home, social issues, economic issues.
And these things change. And these things change drastically across two or 3 or 5 years. And I think what you said about it depending on that specific year group, like what we've done, you made that change with year 11 to add those groups for that particular cohort because that's what was needed for that group. That's, to me, those are the types of decisions that schools should have the freedom to make and should be aware that they have the freedom to make and should be making, rather than saying this is our system and this is our setting system or this is how we do things here, and refusing to budge based on the needs of that particular group of students, which seems to be the approach of the vast majority of schools, at least of teachers that I've spoken to.
Well, I think the difficulty is that moving and changing systems, becomes actually very difficult. And I'm working in a school where it's a relatively new school, so that means that the staff are very used to change. They're very used to development because we haven't got systems that have been in place for decades or even a decade. So that means that staff are more open to development, to consideration, to evaluation, to improvement of moving on. If you've got a school or a system that's very used to doing something one way, suggesting change, making a change, can actually be very difficult in itself. And so there becomes a different issue about how we manage staff's stress, staff workload, because if we're changing things each academic year, then the planning and everything else has to change as well. And so I do think there has to be a balance and a real understanding of not just who your children are, who your students are, but who your staff are.
Absolutely. And we have been receiving a number of texts from listeners, which we're going to read out in just a moment. And please do contribute your thoughts, because as I've said, Carol and I have very different viewpoints on this. And I feel like we've mentioned this already, but I feel like there are some possibilities that are not just black and white completely set or streamed or completely mixed ability. So if you have any experience of a kind of hybrid model of setting or organizing, I should say, your English classes, please do call in or send a text.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
According to reports on the BBC News website, the EU wants to agree a deal with the UK that would make it easier for people aged between 18 and 30 to study abroad in the wake of Brexit. The European Commission says it would be a limited arrangement, not the restoration of freedom of movement. The UK already has schemes with some non-EU countries, and these allow people to come to the UK for up to 2 years. Downing Street says it's open to extending this to individual EU members rather than throughout the EU, but prefers country-by-country deals. The proposed EU scheme has time limits and UK participants would only be able to stay in the EU country that accepted them. The report goes on to say that it would reduce controls on young people moving between the UK and EU. The European Commission says it is stepping in after the UK approached several EU countries to discuss deals. The Commission says it risked differential treatment of EU citizens and there should be a bloc-wide deal for equality. The UK turned down an offer to continue participating in the EU's Erasmus student exchange after Brexit, but did replace it with the Turing scheme, which provides exchanges worldwide. The BBC South East team have covered concerns expressed by some students that they may run out of ADHD medication during the upcoming exam period. Some students have reported rationing their medication in order to stretch it out following reports of shortages due to an increase in demand and manufacturing issues. ADHD medications are often controlled drugs, which means prescriptions are limited to a month's supply, although some pharmacies also struggle to fill even this. The NHS advises against any changes of dosage without medical advice. But families continue to feel anxious about the possibility of young people struggling through the exam season. The Guardian reports on findings from communications regulator Ofcom, which suggests that a quarter of 3- and 4-year-olds in the UK now own a smartphone. Half of children under 13 are on social media. Online activity by infant school-aged children is rising. These findings could boost the argument of those urging the government to clamp down on social media and phone use by young children. A consultation will likely be launched in coming weeks, according to sources in government. This could include a proposal to ban mobile phone sales to under 16s, one to make it easier for parents to use parental controls on devices, and one to raise the minimum age for social media sites from 13 to 16. Michelle Donlan, Technology Secretary, said, children as young as 5 should not be accessing social media. The Ofcom figures come amid what The Guardian says is growing evidence of the impact of social media use amongst children, and the US government refers to it as a profound risk to mental health. The book The Anxious Generation, published in March by a US academic, has been cited as influencing thinking in number 10. The Ofcom survey was based on 2,480 parents of children aged between 3 and 17. The TES reports that absence rates are up again according to latest DfE figures. This is compared with spring 2022-23. This is despite the government's ongoing attendance drive. Overall absence for last term was 7.3%, slightly up on the 7% in the previous year. The Department for Education said the rise was likely to have been caused by a higher level of illness absence. The proportion of persistently absent pupils has also slightly increased to 21.9% of pupils who were missing 10% or more half days. The figures for disadvantaged pupils are worse when compared to their peers. Full details of the latest data can be found on TES.com. Finally, the TES also features a report that the Department for Education does not intend to replace current progress measures, known as Progress 8, for the next 2 years. After exploring alternatives, there will be no progress measures published for schools in England in 2024-25 or 2025-26. The cancellation of Year 6 SATs during the pandemic meant that there was no Key Stage 2 attainment data available as a baseline for Progress 8 calculations. Headline attainment measures will still be published and grading will take place as normal. The Department for Education says it intends to return to Progress 8 in 2026-27. Teaching unions welcomed the announcement, but some described it as a missed opportunity to rethink performance tables overall. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio News with Jo Fox.
My perspective on this whole debate is that what Carol said was absolutely correct. The idea that students are put into different schools at the age of 11 regarding grammar schools is disgusting and horrible and counterproductive and demoralizing and really not in the interest of any kind of functioning society. But I do feel that there should be, in many cases with English, there should be more, I'm just going to come out and say it. I just don't believe mixed ability is the way forward for secondary English, and I will say why. If we lived in an ideal world where we did not have this exam pressure, where we did not have an education system that is geared so completely to students taking this ridiculous, all-consuming set of exams at age 16, if education here was just about learning and knowing things and developing skills and being better, and we didn't have those exams that we all teach to constantly every day. We teach to the exams because we have to, because that is the system we're in. If we didn't have that, I would have a very different opinion. But we are here, and it is now, and students have to take these GCSEs at the end of year 11. So while I don't believe in sets, set groups, in some subjects, and while I don't believe in arranging students according to ability in entire schools, and I don't even believe in streaming in general within schools, I think individual subjects need to have flexibility to do what's right for them. And I really do believe that for English, the right thing is to at least have a top set and a nurture group. And everybody else can be mixed ability. And the reasons for that are as follows. English is language. It is about words. It is about language. And I sat in a meeting a couple weeks ago, I think. This week? My God, what time is it? No, it was a few weeks ago. Was it last week? When a staff member said, I mean, quite rightly on the surface, that you need to know the reading ages of the students in your class. And if a text that you're giving to that class is too complex for the reading ages that you have in that class, you need to pick a different text. Okay. But there's a problem with that. In English, the text is the subject. That's the whole thing. And when you get to GCSE, it's not like, oh, we can use different texts to teach different facts. Like, the texts are the subject. And we need to have the freedom to choose a more challenging text for the kids that are able to do that and should be allowed to do that. And we need to be able to choose a more accessible text for the students who would struggle with that and need something a little bit more accessible. And you can't do that in English unless you have set groups. That's the first thing. Secondly, the way we engage with that subject is, again, more words, whether it's written, whether it's we're focusing on oracy and it's spoken, it's all about language. So it, like, much more than I would say any other subject. And if you are modeling answers, if you are reading things to stretch a class, and you're trying to do anything as a whole class, it is just, and I'm going to say the E word for the first time, it is so much easier to do that, as Carol started to say, if you have a nurture group for the ones that need the extra support, a top set, so no one is being held back, no one's potential is being restricted text-wise by anyone else in the room, and then that will also narrow the gap, again, as Carol said, in the middle. You won't have the nines and you won't have the ones. And so everything else becomes much more manageable for any teacher, regardless of whether they're an ECT or whether they've been doing this for 50 years. Because, again, the system that we're in, no teacher, not a single human, find me one who says they can do this and I will show you a liar. No teacher can effectively differentiate for a class with grade nines and grade ones and everyone in between, effectively differentiate for every single student in that room, every single lesson of the day. It is literally impossible. We do not have the time. We are not provided with enough time to adequately plan, prepare. We just physically, literally cannot do it, even if you have no life outside of work. So I'm gonna use some really probably awful language here, skimming off the top, and putting them in a class, taking the ones who are really, really, really struggling off the bottom and putting them in the nurture group that they need, and then mixing up everyone else allows the top flyers to fly. No one's holding them down, again, with the questionable language, I'm well aware. It allows the students who are really, who need that extra support to get it, and it reduces the gap, the massive range that teachers are expected to differentiate before. And I would argue that English should not just suck it up and teach mixed ability because option subjects do it and whatever. Just because other people have to doesn't mean that you should if you don't have to. Like, if history had 8 classes and they had the option, I'm sure they'd be having discussions about setting 2, but they don't have the capacity to do it. So it's not even part of the conversation. And as I said, English is different. The texts are the subject. And I don't want to. I've done it before, and I don't want to have to teach the same text to the grade ones as the grade nines. To me, that's just like not having the choice there is just silly, really. Although I understand that many schools teach the same text to the entire year group for a whole range of like logistical reasons, including revision and intervention and so on. And I understand that. And again, that's a problem of the system we're in, because there shouldn't be all that intervention. There shouldn't be all that, those revision sessions for a bunch of exam papers. This should be about education, but you know, welcome to the UK. So in an ideal world, I'd be like totally mixed ability, 100%. But the system that we're in and the limitations placed upon us, and the fact that we have a list of books to choose from, and the fact that there are students who are capable of getting grade nines and need to get those grade nines to the next step, A, B, C, D, X, Y, Z, that they want to do, they have every right to be pushed as hard as possible, just as much as every other student does. And it pains me when those top flyers in a particular subject, because I'm not saying they're just, you know, generally bright kids. I hate that word. Like, students who are really good at a particular subject aren't being provided the opportunity to reach their potential because the system doesn't allow it, or because different decisions have been made that are not necessarily with them at the forefront of everyone's mind. That's my rant. What are your thoughts?
I think the difficulty with sort of what you just laid out is it sounds very, very logical when you lay it like that. And you say you're not holding any of the top students back. You're not sort of forcing the less able to try to access text that they can't access. I think it's not quite as simple as that. And actually, the top set, you say you've got room for 30 in your classroom. So what about the other 15 or 20 mm-hmm. in the top set? You can't be yeah. in the top set. Are you certain that the top set students are the students that should be in that group? And what are we basing that on? There's lots and lots of evidence that suggests that disadvantaged children actually suffer greatly from setting. They are cast into lower ability sets, and the gap just remains the gap, and it never closes. Teacher becomes the only model in mixed ability groups where you've taken the top students out. And whilst I understand your objection to being used as a TA, I think there are other ways of mixed ability groups working, in that top abilities absolutely shouldn't be used as TAs. They should be being stretched and challenged, but their views and their presentations and their ideas and the way that they present them is a model for everyone else in the room, just as they share them. And I think their language, their vocabulary, their attitude to reading, their attitude to English, all of that is modelled for those students that struggle. And I think if you separate them and you say, right, you're the top ability, so you can do this text because you're much more able and therefore you will do well, that's all well and good. And there is evidence suggests that the very, very top sets will do slightly better. But then you've got everybody else who, yet again, is not doing as well, not coping, and not having those opportunities to succeed. I think one of the other issues in terms of texts is that there is very limited choice now. Texts, and so there isn't a significant difference. And if you look at the language paper, there is no difference.
No, you're right.
Exactly the same paper. So you're preparing students, if you're using less challenging text, you're actually preparing them to fail, because they are going to be faced with a much more challenging text in the English language paper. There is no option, there is no choice.
Yeah, I suppose when I'm thinking this through and where my frustrations have come from and what's worked with set classes, I'm fully 100% thinking of literature. Because language is, there's no choice. We have no autonomy here. Those papers are what they are. There's nothing we can do. So everything I've just said is about literature, not language.
But I think I'm also thinking about my own A level class, for example. So we've accepted children with a GCSE grade of 5 to come and do A level English. And we have chosen a very challenging text for them to study. We've chosen Frankenstein for them, which is much more challenging than, say, well, I think it's much more challenging than, say, Handmaid's Tale. Which is also on the curriculum. And we've chosen that text because we've also decided not to study Shakespeare. We've chosen to decide...
Scandalous.
No, we have. Because... Streetcar Named Desire was the other option, and I think that was decided that it would be engage them much more. But we wanted them to be able to have enough material to access a degree if they wanted to go on to do a degree in literature, and to inspire them to look at a whole range of texts. So I have taught them Frankenstein, and I began with Frankenstein, which is the most challenging text that we're teaching them over the 2 years. Mm-hmm. Now that we've moved on from that, they are actually finding the other texts and the other concepts much easier.
They
overcome that barrier of challenge. They faced it, they finished it, they've been successful. lots of them gaining C's and B's in their first essays, when they've come to us with only grade fives and sixes in English.
Yeah.
That's a huge achievement. And I am very, very, I'm very much of the belief that children aren't going to be successful unless they're exposed. And I remember finding, you know, English literature very, very challenging. I was sort of, I was reading Wuthering Heights and...
oh, God.
In year nine, Macbeth, Wuthering Heights. What else did I study? I studied...
Wuthering Heights. Oh, okay.
I remember reading it under a blossom tree, but, and actually...
Sorry.
That's literally what we did. We went outside and we sat under a blossom tree and we read Wuthering Heights. I just passed it, but it, and it wasn't until... It wasn't until I got to A level and degree level that I found a new love for it, because I was old enough to be able to access it.
Okay, well, I'm not old enough. I hate that book. I hate that book so much.
But I also that the reason my reading was so difficult, was so effective, was because I was actively encouraged to read texts that I couldn't read, that I found challenging. And I didn't know that I couldn't read them, so I wanted to be able to read them, and I learned and I developed in that way.
Yeah, I get that. I feel like I had similar experiences, kind of self-induced misery, where I'd go to the library and I'd pick these books that were not necessarily, not language-wise above my level, but just concept-wise, like content-wise, just went straight over my head. And I'd read them in high school and be like, well, I understood that, but I don't really get it. Like, I don't get the big deal. Like, I just, that sucked. And then I would read the same books, you know, 5 years later at university and just be weeping by the end of it because I finally got it. And I don't think I would have had that strong reaction the second time had I not kind of forced myself through it in the first instance, I guess.
I do feel that whilst I understand that, I think from a teacher's perspective, the developing of the lessons so that all students can access it is very challenging. I also believe that the actual participation in a mixed ability group is what contributes to progress. So not isolating them in a smaller group of children who are finding learning difficult constantly. And again, it's not an exact science in terms of behaviour, but it is well known that behaviour in lower sets is poorer. Very challenging to be a student who is in that set, those sets constantly, with the same children.
Yeah.
No opportunity to develop and express themselves because they're very quiet, they're very shy. And by now, sometimes the bottom sets have that sort of poorer behaviour, less support. And also, I've worked with some children, you know, I've thought schools would say, well, we need to do that because we only have a certain amount of TAs or, you know, learning.
I've heard that as well.
People go into the bottom set, but then actually a TA is often there to support maybe a student who is autistic or maybe a student who is dyslexic but is more than capable of accessing a multiple level, but then is forced into this set because that's where the TAs are. You know, so there's a lot there that's linked to funding and based on what needs to be delivered on a curriculum, on a timetable, rather than what the child actually needs.
And even on my side here, that's still limited by funding. What I'm suggesting, having a top set and having a nurture group for every single year, that's adding a class. That's adding at least, if you've got two bands, that's adding one to two classes to every single year group. We don't have the staff for that.
Have to make a decision between, okay, so do I employ an extra English teacher, extra maths teacher, extra science teacher, or do I employ more TAs? Which is going to be the more benefit to the curriculum? Do we need an extra teacher so we can have those nurture groups, or do I need more TAs so that I can?
Yeah. It's, I mean, no matter what your position on this, you're going to come up against blocks because of funding. Because I'm so over education in this country right now. I think I just need another 2-week break. Oh boy. All right. So some text messages that we've been talking too much to read. So Emily says, I think that groups should be set at the top, mixed in the middle and set at the bottom, which is kind of what I was saying, but I'm trying to avoid that word bottom there. Let's talk about like nurture groups, and those nurture groups are not necessarily, if they're proper nurture groups for that subject, like a version of a nurture group for that subject, they're not necessarily going to be the bottom attaining students. They are not necessarily going to be the students on paper that you would think would be there. They might be like the year 11 groups we have are not necessarily, they're not the quote unquote weakest in that particular subject. There's a wide range of reasons why those kids are in those groups. But I see what Emily's saying. We've got Roxanne saying, I think sets can become a self-fulfilling prophecy for those students in the lower sets. As Carol was saying, there's a certain idea associated with being, quote, bottom set, that really limits those students in their own minds and the minds of others, probably even including their teacher, albeit unintentionally. Yeah, absolutely. I've seen and occasionally fallen victim to that myself. You lower your expectations. I mean, with every student's abilities and potential and needs and requirements and so on, like obviously expectations are adjusted, but they have to be high for those individual students. High expectations doesn't mean everyone's going to get a 9. You adjust your expectations for particular students and expect the most of them. But if you've got a lower set, then even staff can kind of slip into that. Oh, well, they're bottom set. Oh, well, they're this. Oh, well, they're not going to do anything. Oh, well, there's no point. There's no point. Which shouldn't really be a consideration, because I like to think that everyone's a functioning professional, but we do exist in reality. I mean, that makes sense.
I think one of the ideals for me would be, and this is where the challenge lies, is that you might have sort of a nurture group. Because I do believe that if a child can't read to a certain level, then accessing the work is now impossible. And I have a couple of students in the year 10 that really are sort of still at a reading age of 6. And, you know, they actually find it almost impossible to access the curriculum.
Yeah.
And so I do believe that students with that ability need that extra special care and support.
Yeah.
But I also believe that if we were then teaching in mixed ability groups and we had the opportunity for a group to be almost like a standalone group, which we have in our school in year 11, that group could change termly. Or half
yes.
focus on
yes.
particular skill. So these particular students are really struggling with maybe just expressing their point of view with a certain language, and we want to put them in a room and help them do that. Or maybe they're struggling with being able to write in full sentences with accurate punctuation, and therefore they need more time, and then they need a smaller group so the teacher's got more time to spend with them individually. And I believe that kind of grouping can be very because they go back into the mixed special, they go back into their role class. They're not being labelled in anything. They're just saying, well, you're coming out to this extra work to support you with this, and different children moving around, and that becomes a natural way of working.
And they might, yeah, and they'd probably also be surprised about who got pulled out to go to those groups. Sometimes it would become normalised quite quickly. That's a more specific, targeted version of what else I was going to say is the set groups that I think the setting systems that I've seen work the best are the ones that are fluid, because there's nothing worse than year sevens coming in and the school deciding in October, which is just ridiculous, deciding in October that this child is set 3 and then they stay there forever. It makes absolutely no sense, but so many schools do this, that if there's a setting system, there has to be some fluidity to it. Otherwise, what is the point? What is the point?
I think that's the difference between when we think about streaming, banding, and settings.
Yeah.
Placing a child, streaming them using CAT scores, accountability tests, just to say, well, you're in this set and this is your pathway now, and you can only be able to move between a couple of groups, and that's it. This is a lot of problems for certain children.
So problematic. And I don't trust anything that comes out of the primary school. Sorry, but I don't trust any numbers that we get when any year seven comes through the door in any school, anywhere. I just...
Oh, and you're basing it very much on a single test or a couple of tests at the end of the year when they... And we all know that tests, or you know, PCT results, and we're flabbergasted by results sometimes. Like, how did that child manage to achieve that or not achieve that because they had a good day, a bad day, or the examiner? In what we saw, I genuinely believe that children will be misplaced all the time.
Absolutely, 100%. So we're going to talk more about that in just a moment.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
So, Carol, Do you feel that those groups that you were describing, those kind of flexible groups that would work? I think those would work quite well actually for Key Stage 4. Do you think those could work for Key Stage 3 and some of these Year 7s as well? Or do you feel like those should just be left alone in mixed ability, especially considering the chaos that often happens in primary schools and they're settling into secondary? What do you think?
It depends on the cohort that you've got.
Okay.
Nicely in year 8 and 9. I also think it's very important to feel settled and trust the school you're in. I think it's important for teachers to build relationships with the students and for the students to feel that they are, I suppose, safe in a classroom, to keep moving children around into different groups that they know can actually be very disconcerting for them. We know that sort of some of the assessments that I've worked with find it difficult when the groups are shared. We have two different teachers for one subject, and we find it difficult to move from classroom to classroom. We find it difficult understand the nuances and the teacher's sort of interpretations of the rules that we take. So I do think it can work. I think, again, it's about the head of department and the teacher's role.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So we're approaching the end. So since you are so in favor of mixed ability and I will concede everything you have said made sense to me. I will concede that. I will concede. You speak sense, but I knew you would, and I that's why we're doing this.
She would 100% disagree with me. She would love to be in a top set, and she's not. She's in the mixed ability set at her school. She is adamant that I'm wrong. So that's quite interesting.
Well, child after my own heart, but I get everything. I get everything you've been saying. So since you are so in favor, please leave us then with some advice for a teacher, an English teacher, who has a year 10 class of 32 students, who are currently working at grades, not consistently, but occasionally, 9 to you. Advice, please.
I would 100% need to know, as a teacher, what their target grades are and whether the students are underachieving. I would want to know their reading ages very carefully. And I would need to think about what it is each of those. I would group them into smaller groups within my mind, and I would want to know what I need to do for each of those groups to move them on, so each lesson, each week, each month, they feel successful and I can see some progress. And it's not easy to look at the lesson that way, but I do think it's really, really important to be more pragmatic about what is it I want this small group of children to make progress on, and how am I going to ensure that that happens.
I still want to cry. It's just a lot.
No, it's not easy. I think of my own year 10s, and I've got students with targets of 8s, and I've got students who are 2s. And I do. I look at the text that I'm going to deliver to them. I think, right, how am I going to ensure they can all access this text? Which words and phrases are some of them going to need to support with? How am I going to ensure that the top group are able to develop and explore what am I going to get them to look at, and how am I going to get them to do it? And I craft the lesson very carefully to ensure that I'm putting in the little scaffolds at the right point for each group. It's not easy, but it is incredibly rewarding.
I feel like there's enough reward in my life.
Pledging, that's my problem.
Yeah, I've been rewarded. I'm so rewarded, Carol. I've got so many rewards. I'm good.
You know, I love the skill of crafting those lessons. I really enjoy it. I really do.
And
but I love it when it does.
And that's why you're so good at your job, and why I am not. That's yes. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing your views. I feel like I have been tempered slightly, even though I'm not fully, you know, not fully convinced, but maybe we'll get there one day. Maybe we'll get there one day. And thank you so much for listening. Have a lovely evening or morning or afternoon, whenever you are listening to this. And I will hopefully hear you next time.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.